Thanks. So I'm an economist. Any economists in the room? Anyone particularly interested in economics? Anyone absolutely not interested? Anybody? I can hear myself very well. I get a lot of feedback. Anyone especially not interested in economics? Okay. Well, I'm going to... This presentation today, it actually follows from some work I did with Nancy a couple years ago on the Fabric Project and some other OVC programs, where as part of the understanding the potential impacts of the programs, the question was, well, what did the programs cost? How did they operate? How can we generate that information on the cost side to combine with the impacts or effectiveness side to think about cost outcomes analysis, cost effectiveness analysis? And so in that little diagram where you had the FHI 360, then Fabric, then the expanded church response, and then you had the FBOs, the faith-based organizations, I think of those as the local NGOs that were on the ground implementing programs. And the information on costing of OVC programs seems to be the least developed for understanding what's going on within the local FBOs that are part of implementing an overall OVC program. So what we did was we worked with some of these FBOs to think through and help them understand their costs of their programs, and more importantly, how they implemented their costs, what the structure of costs were, how that relates to the inputs that were going into their program, and hopefully were generating the outputs that Nancy was talking about. By going through that process and some other activities in Kenya, we realized that the information on the costs of OVC programs as they're actually implemented, not as they're budgeted, but actually how they actually work, was very kind of sparse. And so as part of our process, we figured out a way to go about doing it in a relatively painless way, I think. So what I'm going to do today is give you a snapshot of how we recommend going about doing this OVC program costing in a low-tech way, in a useful way, but we don't want to waste everyone's time analyzing costs forever. Okay. So I guess I'll just say that so the cost of implementing programs, what I mean is the costs, you know, how much was spent, that's one thing, but the costs are really the opportunity costs of the resources used to implement the program. So that's part of it, but we also want to know the structure of costs, okay? Disaggregate these costs into key input categories that say this is how the program operated, okay? That's what I mean by cost, not just one number, okay? What I found interesting about this as an economist, the methods and the tools for evaluating the costs of programs have been written about for 50, 100 years. There's nothing new methodologically, there's nothing new theoretically that is needed. Okay? But there's been this disconnect because there's still little information available on these costs, and I've always wondered, why not? And I think the problem is really that there's just a disconnect between the theory and the methods in the textbooks, and actually how you get the information to do the analysis, okay? And so I think by us working with the FBOs, and understanding how the FBOs and community-based organizations organize themselves, we've come up with sort of a recommended kind of a strategy to where we can help these organizations figure out their costs of implementing their programs in a fairly, very practical way. And I think my hope and my goal here is that we can work with programs working through local faith-based organizations or NGOs to get them to implement these methods, the small data collection activity that's part of their routine practice of implementing their programs going forward. Okay. So this, I guess, the second bullet is what I'll get to. Is really the goal here is let's have this OVC program costing and really program costing of any NGO program. Let's organize it so it can become routine practice. It's part of routine monitoring evaluation, just like reporting on how many people were served or whatever their outcome measures were. It doesn't have to be onerous. It doesn't have to be too complicated. And it doesn't require much more information than the programs are already collecting. It's just organizing it in a useful way. Okay. So I was gonna call this seven steps, but there are too many seven-step self-help books, so I avoided seven. So I kept it at six. Well, you'll see I cheated. Because I threw in a prerequisite. Okay? And the prerequisite is, so the goal here is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to work through very simply how I think we can go about, how I know we can go about costing OVC programs. But the first step is to be very clear on what's the program. Okay? Can we define the intervention, if we're in the impact evaluation world, to get a clear understanding of what's the program? As an economist, I would think of this as the production function. What are the inputs coming in? Something, a technology translates that into something that comes out, hopefully the positive impacts on OVC and their households. But what's amazing is how complicated it can be to try to explain what OVC programs are doing, okay, and how they go about what they're doing. Everyone's doing 6+1 somehow, but how they're doing it can be difficult to understand. That's the hardest part, I think, of understanding this world, which I'll get back to that later. So the first, I'm going to go through steps rather than describing the six steps and then going through each one. In the interest of time, I'm going to just jump into each step. And we'll get there quickly, okay? And this will be available, and I've got a paper. I'm happy to send it to you. Just want to kind of give you a flavor of things now, okay? So I'm going to give you an example of a program. This is the community-based care for OVC program that was implemented by Christian Aid in Kenya, other countries as well. I'm going to focus on the Kenya program. And Christian Aid was the FHI equivalent for this program. And Christian Aid worked with two larger NGOs in Kenya, one called BD, it's in eastern Kenya, and one called ADS, Anglican Development Services, that's out in Nyanza. And so I'm going to talk just about the BD portion of the program today. And in the BD program, about 1,500 caregivers were in the program, OVC caregivers, 1,500 households with 3,600 OVC. So that's kind of the magnitude of the program. So BD was about a third, roughly, of what I understood in the Fabric program in Zambia. This is half of the program in Kenya. So this is the organization. So now, how did this program operate? What was its sort of production structure? Well, here's my best understanding of how it works, okay? Because this partner NGO, which was BD up at top, it worked through savings and loan associations. It organized groups of caregivers, approximately 30 in each group, to organize into village savings and loan associations. That was the conduit through which services were provided to caregivers and the OVC that were in those households. Okay? And then it did a lot of things. It did through the household, it did income through the SLAs, it did income generating activities, it did savings and loan stuff. It provided side support to OVC like school fees, perhaps medical services, those kinds of things. But the conduit was through this group of caregivers, the Savings and Loan Association, and it did other things. But in each program discussion or description, it would be nice to see a diagram or some description that explains how did the thing operate. And this program operated primarily through, you can't read that very well, but it says SLA facilitators. The program, BD in this case, had these people called facilitators that went out and worked with each SLA. And that facilitator was the conduit for information on how to maintain the Savings Loan Association, income-generating activities, school fees to the kids, you name it. Members of the SLA themselves were then volunteers to be used for, they called them mentors, but it's really almost like a social worker role in the SLA, where a couple SLA members became social workers for the households and the OVC in their SLA and other things. Okay? So this was the program. So here's the first step, and if you do the first two steps, you've done half of what you need to do. And the first thing to do for a costing analysis is you have to become friends with the accountant of the NGO or the FBO. Okay? Or most importantly, is they are the person who can be doing this in the future. It's their information, it's their analysis. We need to look at their financial report. Even the very small FBOs they're working with, the Fabric Project, basically have an Excel file that has their itemized expenses in it. Okay? You need to access that itemized expense file and just organize it. Okay, and I'm going to show you an example of how to organize it. Organize it and reorganize it into useful categories that describe groups of inputs that were used to implement the program. Okay. Here, I apologize, but I want to fit on one slide so you can see this. So here's a program that in 2009 spent 5.4 million shillings, had expenditures of 5.4 million shillings, which is about $75,000, if I can do the math right. So this organization has a financial report that has seven categories in it. Okay, it's got called personnel, fringe, travel, equipment, OVC support activities, and other. So those are financial reporting categories, and typically these financial reporting categories make sense for tax documenting reasons and those kinds of things, okay? But now, and there's, you know, 88 individual line items for personnel. That's what the N88 is. You know, there's N9, there's nine fringe benefits payments. Under OVC support activities, there's 157 itemized expenses, okay? But OVC support activities as an economist doesn't mean anything. It's a grouping of expenditures, but it's not an input, okay? So all I did, and all you can do, is basically in the financial report, there'll be a payment. There's often an expense number, and there'll be a little description. And often those descriptions start to look all alike. If you take that expense report and sort it by the top code, you know, personnel one, and just sort it by anything else that shows up, groupings, natural groupings start to show up. So rather than trying to force NGOs to report in fixed ways that meet groupings that we think they should have, let's just see how their expenses actually show up and have the groupings be generated for us. And so I just sorted all these different things into logical subgroupings. And let's look at category five. That's the most interesting one for this case, the OVC support activities. So in there we have education fees. We have other education expenses like books, paper, that kind of stuff. But also in OVC support activities are actually facilitator payments. Okay, so these facilitators are staff, or maybe they're not staff, maybe they're something else, but they're people working on the project. So you might think that would be in personnel, not OVC support activities. But in terms of the tax accounting, they're not staff. You're not paying taxes on them, so they show up somewhere else. But we need to kind of think about how to pull them out. Similarly, you know, local meetings that are held in those local areas with the overall project to talk about whatever, it's not clear, is that an OVC support activity or what, okay? So here's where just, you know, it's like Shakespeare in Love, you know, when the one fellow said, you know, how does this work out? And the guy says, I don't know, but it does. Well, that's the same thing here. If you just stare at this long enough, the natural groupings appear, and you can start rearranging them. And I just rearranged them. And there's into, I think, eight categories. There's a natural grouping that are NGO staff payments. They're the actual real staff. You're paying some sort of salary, your taxes, you have health insurance, you have leave, that kind of stuff. You have NGO office expenses, rent, office repairs. You have other office costs, everything from bank charges to video production to audit fees, stuff that's all part of operating the NGO program. And you have a lot of travel. You know, when you have these OVC programs are distributed around a lot of places. The SLAs, the groups of caregivers, are distributed in a lot of places. The facilitators need to travel to a lot of places. There gets to be a lot of staff traveling, coordination, discussion, local meetings that show up in travel expenses. Then you have these payments to these other people called facilitators. They aren't really staff, but they're payments to somebody. Okay, and then you have the materials directly to the SLAs in terms of training. There will be things like, you know, you buy a locks box so that people don't steal the money and that kind of stuff. Then there are these people called mentors, which are really the social workers that are part of the SLAs. And they have some small payments for things like mentor motivation. So when you see this in the expense reports, that's why you need to have the financial person with you and the program person working together so they can explain what these things are. These are the small kind of gratuities, token payments that are made. And then there's education fees. So we just resorted into eight categories of, as an economist, I can understand as inputs. These are groupings of similar things that went into the program, describe how it was operated. And we'll take that 5.4 million shillings and rearrange it into these eight categories. Okay? So on the right-hand side, 20% of the program was staff, 2% was office, 3% was office, other office costs, supplies, that kind of stuff. 17%, you get the idea. So here is what I consider a cost profile. If I, rather than looking at a financial report that says 5.4 million shillings, if I look at this, I can understand, okay, really what did the program do? It had staff, it had an office, it traveled, it paid facilitators, it paid SLA members, paid mentors, and it had education expenses. Except 30% of the whole budget was education expenses. So even though the goal of this project was household economic strengthening, support for OVC through SLAs, still education became a big part of the budget. Okay, so here's, one can do this in less than a day. And in less than a day, you can have, actually you can do this in a few hours. In less than a day, you can have a good description of how this OVC program worked. Okay? So now there's going to be a few other bells and whistles to add on top of this for us to get a better perspective of really the full cost of implementing this program. And with 5 minutes left, I'm going to go through this in a summary fashion. Okay? The first thing you're going to do is, these programs all have equipment. And in 2009, they had no expense that anyone would consider really equipment. They weren't buying vehicles, they weren't buying TVs, they weren't buying anything. What's equipment? It's something that's going to last for more than a year when you're using it. Okay? But they all have asset registers or equipment registers for insurance reasons and to make sure people don't steal stuff. You can get a list of, you know, what have they bought in the last several years. This was 2009 to 2005. And you see, not heavy in equipment. They got a Toyota 4x4, basically. Well, we're not going to bore you, but we're going to translate these equipment, upfront equipment purchases, into annual equivalents. Just like when you buy a car, you get a car loan. Okay, so we'd add on an extra $600,000 of costs into the 2009 program. These are the services that were provided by this equipment that was bought in previous years. Okay, that's not too exciting. The least clear set of information in OVC programs seems to me that they rely on large amounts of volunteer time and perhaps other donations of goods and services that are poorly documented. So if you want to understand the impacts that Nancy is observing maybe in the Fabric program, and you want to evaluate the costs that were incurred to achieve those impacts, and if you wanted to replicate that program elsewhere, hoping for the same costs, if you didn't get the same amount of free stuff, you wouldn't be able to implement the program the same way. So figuring out how to document volunteer time and donated goods and services is beyond right now, but I'm just going to say we need to do it. We made some quick guesses on the number of people involved, what they did, how long they involved in the project. We came up with about 15,000 days a year of volunteer time. Okay, that's 200 and some full-time equivalents. Massive amounts of people in a kind of a volunteer or semi-volunteer capacity. We took some estimates of the days, took some estimates of what would you need to pay if you were going to hire that person to do a similar job. Okay, came up with a number of 4.9 million. That's almost as much as the direct expenditures of the program. It gives you the magnitude of the volunteer time. We might have gotten the dollar per day wrong, but we probably are pretty close on the amount of time. If you wanted to replicate this program elsewhere, if you didn't know that you were going to have to marshal 14,000 days of extra volunteer time, you'd be, you know, in trouble. Okay. The last thing is the organization will have some fixed costs that aren't attributed directly to the program, but the program needed to operate. We can read the paper and we can figure out how to do that later. But the result here is the financial cost profile looks very different than the total cost profile. The differences, the white kind of shaded columns are what changes when the facilitators, they're getting some small payments, but if you had to hire people at a reasonable rate, you would be charged a lot more. Same for, especially for the facilitators. But even the Impact Zone Coordinating Committee, all these programs will have a group of community members that work as advisory boards, basically. Okay, so basically, in this quick analysis, the full cost doubled from, you know, $5.4 million to $11 million. Gives you a flavor of how to go about it. Now, and you see, you know, once you look at the structure, you know, you see the role of facilitators and mentors particularly show up, because there's large, you know, there's two mentors per SLA. That's 100 and some mentors working, you know, a few days a week, checking in on children. It's a lot of time. This program, how much does this program actually spend on oversee at the CBCO level? About $49 per SLA member per household, or about $21 per child in direct financial expenditures, and you pretty much double that. Okay. These numbers, this is, when you're looking at impacts of OVC programs, this number you'd have to add on top of that then Christian Aid's costs, okay, to probably about, even if it was double, okay, you're still talking about less than $100 per child full cost from the time it's in Christian Aid's bank account throughout. So when you look at budgeting for OVC programs where you see numbers of $1,000 per child to provide services, those are budgets. Those are made up. If all this stuff was provided, that's what it would cost. But all this stuff isn't provided. You know, programs in the Fabric program as well, the costs were in a similar line. I'm going to end with one thing. People want to apportion costs to areas of program support. Okay? How much did it cost just for the household economic strengthening? Or how much did it cost just for the psychosocial component? Okay? You can't do it. There's no theory to do it. There's no logical way to do it. People will do it, and it's nonsensical information. The information won't be useful for evaluation of other programs. And I got to stop there. The benefit of having short time, you get to assert these things and then leave. So, okay. So thank you.